Welcome to Logical, the UAE's first regular legal podcast. I'm Tim Elliott. In today's podcast, we're looking at the legal situation for non-Muslim mothers with Muslim children in the UAE, particularly in cases of divorce. Now, as ever, with me is Ludmila Yamalova, managing partner of the Dubai-based legal firm HPL Yamalova & Plethka. Ludmila is a US-qualified lawyer based in Dubai. Good to be chatting to you again, Ludmila.
Great to be here with you, Tim, as always. Thanks for being here.
Let's dive straight in. Ludmila, can you broadly outline the legal position for non-Muslim mothers with Muslim children in the UAE, particularly bearing in mind divorce cases?
Yes, certainly, Tim. And indeed, this is a critical issue in the UAE. And this is because under the UAE law, if a father is Muslim, the children are automatically considered Muslim as well, regardless of the mother's religion. Which means in divorce cases, this can significantly impact custody of arrangements.
Yeah, that's interesting. Can you elaborate on how this affects custody decisions?
So according to Article 144 and Article 145 of the UAE Personal Status Law, which is the federal law number 28 of 2005, the custodian of a Muslim child must be of the same religion as the child. This means that a non-Muslim mother could potentially lose custody of her children in a divorce or legal separation.
Are there any specific conditions under which this law applies?
Yes, there are. So this applies to families with children where the father is Muslim, while the mother is of a different religion, and they choose to divorce in the UAE. And it's important to note that neither the nationality or the citizenship of the parties is the default application of in such cases, or has default importance in such cases, nor is the country where the couple got married.
It's strict, but are there any exceptions to the rule?
Yes, there are some exceptions and there is some flexibility. So under Article 145, the judges are permitted for the mother, the non-Muslim mother, to retain custody until the child reaches 5 years of age, if it is deemed that it's in the child's best interest. So, but it is only really to the age of five. However, after that age, the custody typically reverts to the Muslim father or another Muslim relative.
Ludmila, is there any possibility of applying foreign law in these cases, particularly for expatriate families?
It's an excellent question, Tim. And in recent years, there have been some developments in this particular area. So in 2020, the UAE introduced changes allowing the application of foreign law in certain personal status cases involving non-Muslims. However, it is important to note that this primarily applies to cases where both parents are non-Muslim. For mixed religion couples, especially where the father is Muslim, the UAE law still generally prevails. But it does remain to be seen as things continue to progress and evolve and develop in the UAE, how the courts will continue to treat this particular issue and whether they will allow application of foreign law in such cases, in particular where the parents of different nationalities and perhaps even the couple got married in yet another country. So there will be a choice of other laws that could logically be argued. So while at present it's difficult to perhaps comment with any kind of certainty with respect to whether the courts would consider the application of these other foreign laws. Certainly parties can argue it, but whether the courts will give priority or precedence to those foreign laws over their own personal status law for non-Muslim families, it's difficult at this point to speculate it and with any kind of level of certainty. But we have seen tremendous legislative amendments, progressive amendments in the last few years. So I would like to believe that this particular application, it's less even about legislative amendments, but more of application and implementation of the current laws, will allow for courts to start at least considering these kinds of requests of application of foreign laws and allow couples to actually apply laws of their own citizenship or laws of the country where they were married in such cases, in particular when it involves custody and where the mother is of other religion other than Islam.
Can you share any specific examples of any cases that have played out in this way, in your experience, Ludmila?
Yes, indeed. In fact, we recently had a case where the mother is a European national and was married to a Muslim man. But, you know, it's interesting because in this particular case, the mother holds two nationalities, one European and one North American, and so does the father. The father has a North American nationality, Canadian in this particular case, and also one from the Middle East, not a Marathi. And in this, they have a daughter, and so default application of the UAE laws, the daughter is also considered Muslim. And so when the couple decided to divorce, the child is still quite minor, but, you know, but nearing the age of five, because divorce was acrimonious, unfortunately, as so many divorces are. So the father wanted to take the custody of the child, not because he wanted the child, as is often the case, but rather it was punitive to the mother for wanting to divorce him. And although she had good reasons to want to divorce, because it wasn't like he was an exemplary father or husband. So truly, and this is a one particular case where this the father's attempt to take away custody was not done in the interest of the child, or even in sort of from good intentions, but rather just punitive purposes to teach mother a lesson and to hurt her. And unfortunately, because the child, the couple was actually married, not in the UAE either. So they had a civil marriage, but because they were residents of the UAE, and the father is Muslim, so the child by default is considered Muslim, and therefore in the divorce, when they applied for divorce, the court applied UAE personal status law, which applies basically the principles of Sharia in such cases, and because the mother was not Muslim, the court said she had no right to have custody over the child. And you can imagine a European woman who, in fact, has two citizenships, European and North American. You can imagine this is a shock. And basically, she was advised along the way to convert. I mean, that's often the advice that in such cases parties receive from lawyers, just to basically to try to preserve ability to have custody over the child, kind of, and give the child the continuity of mother care. So she converted while the case was ongoing, and kind of argued that she's now Muslim and therefore she should have default custody of the child. But even in cases like this, there's two kind of major issues. One, which she faced, both of them, by the way. So one is the father argued, well, she's not really a good Muslim. She's not Muslim. She's not real. She hasn't really converted to Islam, because, you know, you can only become Muslim if you truly sort of believe in conversion. So she just did it for to be able to argue custody. So there's always that chance of that argument. And depending on how well it's argued or depending on what evidence the father will bring, I mean, so the court still has that kind of discretion to decide whether it gives much credence to that kind of conversion that happens during the course of the legal proceedings. So that's one one issue. And in this particular case, is it was indeed argued, but ultimately the court was sort of faced with this, okay, well, there is a paper that confirms the mother's conversion. And so the parties decided to settle because of this kind of became a more complex issue. And so they came up with a settlement agreement that that gave mother custody. But there are a number of conditions that were attached to the mother's continuing custody that were once again kind of rooted or based on some principles, Islamic principles, such as, for example, the mother must not remarry, she must not, she must be a good Muslim, she must not drink, and she must not date, you know, in order to be a good Muslim. So there were all these different conditions attached in settlement agreement. And so, and then fast forward a few years, when the mother started dating, then the father threatened to invalidate the settlement agreement on the grounds that the mother is actually not a good Muslim. And so that's the other ground. Remember, I mentioned the first ground. One is just the questioning, the veracity, or the sincerity of conversion. And the other one is to later even invalidate custody on the basis of, and that, by the way, happens even in the Muslim couples, that the father can always argue that the mother should lose custody because she is not a good Muslim. So what makes a woman not a good Muslim in cases like this, right? And that's from the perspective of the father who would want to take away custody, is that, well, let's say she drinks, right? Or she starts dating. Certainly if she remarries. And in this case, this is another example. We saw both arguments, during the court proceedings, where the father argued that the mother was not actually Muslim because her conversion was not sincere. And then a few years later, he argued that the settlement agreement was not valid, or was now invalidated, because the mother started dating and that made her a bad Muslim. And as such, again, under the same principles of Islamic teachings, she should lose custody because she's not a good Muslim, and if she's not a good Muslim, she is not fit to take care of a Muslim child. So this is just one case in particular that I wanted to share, because it kind of highlights different aspects of these sort of complexities of these kinds of relationships. And unfortunately, it kind of also shows perhaps the very worst of how this law could be applied and abused. Again, not for the purposes of the actions in this particular case. The father's actions were not motivated by what's best for the child, but rather punitive and retaliatory in nature, just to hurt the mother.
And unfortunately, that's how so many divorces seem to progress, isn't it? I mean, it's fascinating. So it begs the question, Ludmilla, what advice would you give to non-Muslim mothers in a similar situation?
Well, my primary advice is just to seek legal consultation and legal counsel early in the process, and ensure that all documentation is in order. Crucial to understand the implications of the UAE law on their specific situations. And I would also advise them to consider registering a will, for example, that outlines their wishes regarding the children's upbringing, and also perhaps some kind of agreements ahead of time. But just being informed, I guess, is my main advice. That's not to say that we should be discouraging these kinds of marriages or these sort of relationships, but the reality is such that, and the purpose of this discussion today is to just bring light to this issue, and to educate, to provide information and help educate people so that they can manage their expectations, so they can make the right choices at the right time. And by the way, what's also important to share and kind of remind is that, because we hear these cases all the time, well, can I just go back to my country and apply for a divorce there? And we see these kinds of requests, all too often. And the reality, and this is important to highlight, is that in personal status cases and in custody and divorces in particular, it's the UAE will have primary jurisdiction or default jurisdiction over anyone who is a resident of the UAE, right? So default jurisdiction, one. Two, and even more, perhaps more importantly, is for everyone to understand is that their nationality, just because they're, let's say, American, Canadian, or French, you know, that's they cannot just go back to their country and try to divorce in that country while they're residents of the UAE. And that's because even in most of those countries, for the courts to have jurisdiction over the couple's marriage and the child, the couple needs to have resided in the country for X number of months or years, depending on which country. Let's say in the U.S., in some states it's 2 years, and you know there are some states where it can be 6 months, but you basically need to reside in the states, let's say for 6 months in a particular state, to be able to claim that that the U.S. courts should have jurisdiction over the divorce. But just having a U.S. nationality in itself will not give you that protection, will not give you that choice if you don't reside in the U.S. regularly. So, and that's important to highlight, because a lot of people are not aware of it. You know, they are convinced that because, let's say, they have the U.S. passport or they have a Canadian passport, so that obviously they have a choice if not applying that particular law in the UAE, but at least going back to their home countries and having the courts of their home countries protect them and apply the home country's law in their divorces. But it's not so simple, because we've litigated many of these cases involving US, England, France. And so in each one of those cases, in order for those courts to have jurisdiction, the parties needed to have resided in the country for X number of a minimum of 6 months. So the idea here is, in terms of advice, is to just for the parties to be aware of that, just because you hold, let's say, an American nationality, it's in this particular case, that's not going to be decisive, at least at this point in time.
Let me ask you about prenuptial agreements, Ludmilla. If a couple includes provisions about child custody in their prenup, would that be enforceable in court?
It's an excellent question, Tim. And the short answer is not really. The supervisions in prenuptial agreements regarding child custody are generally not enforceable in court. And the courts in the UAE, like in many other jurisdictions, consider the best interest of the child as the sort of paramount concern when making custody decisions.
Can you explain why that's the case?
Certainly. Well, there are several reasons for this. Firstly, the circumstances of the parents and the needs of the children can change significantly between the time of a prenup, the prenuptial agreement is signed, and when the custody decision needs to be made. Secondly, courts view the right to make decisions about child's welfare as fundamental parental right that cannot be contracted away in advance.
So if a couple includes custody provisions in their prenup, what happens to those, Ludmilla?
Well, while the custody provisions in the prenup would not be automatically enforced, they're not necessarily ignored either. A court might consider them as evidence of the parents' intentions or preferences. However, the court will always make its own determination based on child's best interest at the time of the custody decision. But I will tell you there are different ways of, perhaps different provisions that can be included in prenuptial agreements to help facilitate at least, the arguments to the court to enforce at least parts of the prenuptial agreements, because parties certainly. So the idea of a prenuptial agreement is that the courts will obviously consider the best interest of the child, and so the parties can, let's say, at that in the prenuptial agreement, beef up, what it is that they agree is going to be the best interest of the child. So let's say the father comes from a war-stricken country like Yemen. Right. And so the parties can, let's say, in this prenuptial agreement, specify that whenever they have a child, is that they agree that it's in the best interest of the child for the child to have a different nationality and not live in Yemen, for example. Right. So the more of these kinds of provisions that the couples will include in the prenuptial agreements, the higher the chances that the courts will actually seriously consider them. right? Let's say I'm using some perhaps sort of dramatic examples, but just in, for the sake of argument, let's say the father comes from also a very tumultuous family, right? And the father is aware of it and open about it. And the couple includes in the prenuptial agreement the sort of the complexity of the father's family dynamic, where let's say the father has been kind of an outcast from the family, right? And so you could include a provision in the prenuptial agreement that because of the father's sort of complex and maybe even toxic family dynamic, that the parties agree that should they have a child in the future, that that the father's family should not have custody or the child should not be brought up as part of the father's family. Again, this is, you know, it's not a guaranteed provision in terms of its enforceability, but certainly an argument that the mother later on can argue. Because remember, if the idea here is that the mother is a non-Muslim, then it's the father or the father's family that will take will assume custody because they're Muslim. So, but if you have this specific provision that if the court is sort of being guided by an overarching principle, what is about best in the interest of the child, and then there's a provision in the prenup agreement that clearly kind of outlines the family's sort of complex and toxic, if not dangerous, dynamic, then the mother certainly has some tools to rely on to argue that in the very least, the custody should not be transferred to the family because they're, you know, it's not going to be in the best interest of the child. That's another example which you can include in the custody agreement. You know, others, for example, regarding anything that ultimately would not contradict some sort of inherent principles of Islam, let's say, and also would not contradict the overarching principle of what's best in the children's interest, right? So, for example, you could provide very specific provisions about compensation, about who pays for what, about where the child should be spending their summers, their holidays, you know, how much time they should be spending with their grandparents, which house they should be living in. So there's a lot of kind of also commercial provisions that could be included in the prenuptial agreements that, at least from a commercial standpoint, would, if not necessarily give kind of transfer custody to the father, but at least act as deterrent for the father to claim full custody, and therefore kind of be more of an incentive for the father to agree not to claim full custody. So in summary, I would argue that having a prenuptial agreement that's detailed and that outlines the potential kind of application and party stance on the child's custody upon their separation or divorce is highly advisable. And because having something is better than nothing. Having some provisions to argue and rely on is, you know, something that, you know, better something than nothing. And including, you can also include in a prenuptial agreement, for example, what laws the parties wish to apply. And they could, you could even beef up that particular provision that this, the parties unequivocally agree. They're, for example, in such cases, they would apply the law of Canada in their divorces. And that's just, you know, and that's not subject for reconsideration. Again, well, whether the court will apply that provision or not remains to be seen, but at least it gives the mother a very tangible tool to argue. And I do think that with time, it will be harder for the courts to ignore these kinds of provisions altogether, given the overall legislative evolution that we are seeing in the UAE. So I kind of will take this opportunity to also comment on the scope of prenuptial agreements, because we draft quite a bit of those, and we've dealt with other law firms representing, let's say, the other side in prenuptial agreements, and the standards and the approach to prenuptial agreements differ significantly between perhaps sort of legal practitioners. So in our case, we always include provisions, I mean, obviously subject to the parties' agreement, sort of children. So we do include a provision, okay, if the couple were to have a child, this is what they agree, this is how they agree to raise a child. And this is exactly done with the motivations I've just shared with you from those subjects, the purposes of, you know, having some kind of tools and for the parties to have kind of thought through and agreed in advance how they may want to raise their child. So they're more or less on the same page, right? At least they have some kind of a common ground to, first of all, to kind of confirm now before it's too late. And second of all, later on to rely on, kind of remind each other, listen, we had agreed on this. But a lot of other legal practitioners believe that prenuptial agreements should basically only include the commercial or financial elements of the party's arrangement and nothing about the children. So different approaches, but I would argue, especially because of cases like this, and we see all too many cases like that, where the parties, you know, obviously people go into marriages most of the time because they think this is it. This is, you know, they have found the love of their life. And, you know, only a year later, in some cases, 25 years later, finding that they're like each other's worst enemies. So that's why having something like this is really, I'd say, the more detailed, the more sort of comprehensive the prenuptial agreement is, in particular applies to children, is highly advisable.
Are there any recent legal developments that mothers, non-Muslim mothers of Muslim children should be aware of, Ludmila?
For sure. So there have been a number of positive developments. So for instance, in Abu Dhabi, recently, I guess a little earlier, but 3 years ago in 2021, and that's particular law number 14, Abu Dhabi law number 14, 2021, allowed for joint custody arrangements for non-Muslim parents. While this is not directly applied to mixed religion couples, it shows a trend towards more flexible custody arrangements in the UAE. And this is why I mentioned the idea of prenuptial agreements, because ultimately you do prenuptial agreements with the expectation that it will only come in handy in the future, and hopefully in a kind of a distant future, not a near future. And between now and that distant future, many things can happen. A lot more legislative amendments can be introduced, and the courts will apply and continue to apply a more kind of liberalized, more sort of modern perspective, and particularly when it comes down to families and nationals of other countries. That's why I think having something is better than nothing, because we are seeing that trend, that evolution of just modernization in terms of legal application to cases like that, the personal status matters in particular. So Abu Dhabi has led the way. You know, recently, Abu Dhabi also introduced a personal status court in English. And there's even the judgments are being written in English. So we continue to move and progress in that direction, which basically means the UAE is continuing to be more considerate in terms of who comprises the UAE population today. And it's a lot of residents. You know, residents are nationals of other countries. And so if it wants to continue to bring these people, the more quality people that can continue to contribute into the UAE's economy and society, you know, it's in the country's interest to provide more kind of legislative framework, to provide parties with more certainty in terms of what their rights are and kind of expectation of, you know, what they could expect the courts of their own countries would do in cases of divorces and separations in particular.
It's encouraging, Ludmila. Any final thoughts for anybody listening to this podcast?
Yes, for sure. I mean, I'd like to emphasize the importance of understanding cultural and religious sensitivities in these cases. These situations are complex and are often emotionally charged. But with the right approach and understanding of the UAE law, certainly can often find solutions that serve the best interests of the children and the parents, while respecting the rights of both parents. Knowledge is everything. So education is extremely important in this particular matter. The emphasis is always on, you know your rights, you know the laws. You don't assume just because you live in the UAE, but you have a nationality of a different country, that you have the protection of your own country's laws in such cases. Knowledge is power.
That is another logical custody by non-Muslim mothers over Muslim children in the UAE. We say thank you for listening and watching if you're with us on YouTube. And thanks as always to our legal expert, managing partner here at Yamalova and Pleska, and the inimitable TikTok lawyer herself, Ludmila Yamalova. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure, Tim. Thank you so much for chatting with me and for continuing to do this podcast.
You can reach out to us at LY Law on social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. Our podcasts are all free at lylawyers.com. And wherever you find your podcast, be sure to subscribe so you can stay informed and empowered. And to get a legal question answered, either by a qualified UAE experienced legal professional or in an episode of Logical, click on contact at lylawyers.com.